Today is Monday, the 20th of April, and this is the World Socialist Website. The Pit, the medical drama whose social realism and honesty have gripped millions, by Isabel Roy and David Walsh. There is genuine significance to the manner in which The Pit, the television medical drama, has gripped and captivated tens of millions of people in the US and around the world. The series has become something of a social-cultural phenomenon. The season 2 premiere of The Pit drew nearly 200% more viewers in its first 3 days than the series' launch a year before. By mid-January, the show was logging 1.19 billion streaming minutes a week and averaging approximately 12 million US viewers per episode. While no viewership numbers have been released for the finale, the concluding and post-credits scenes have gone viral on social media with overwhelmingly positive reactions. The deep impression the television series has made speaks to the specific conditions of healthcare and the crisis in healthcare, but more generally it reveals a sympathetic response to an unusually humane treatment of social life as a whole in the US. At a time when the national government under Donald Trump and many other official layers and institutions are increasingly identified with little else but cruelty, repression, and gangsterism, wide layers of the population are looking for social forces and means that offer a way out of the current intolerable conditions. Confronted by a hostile political setup, dominated by two corrupt big business parties, great numbers of people have chosen to focus on a Pittsburgh hospital and its emergency department as a microcosm in which major problems of life are solved on a rational human basis. The Pit's realism is unusual and welcome. Many of the popular streaming successes over the past several decades have demonstrated a lack of humanity, if not outright misanthropy, and an absence of genuine interest in complex motivations and interactions. Exploration of the so-called dark side of life, the colder and viler the better, have dominated. Those deemed gritty or hard-hitting have often adopted a cynical and pessimistic stance. There has been a tendency to associate shocking and brutal twists and unrelenting defeat or tragedy with quality drama. Much of this darkness is simply cheap, marketable stuff, which only encourages passivity and numbness. The Pit, to its considerable credit, is different. While season 2 does not shy away from contradictory and flawed characters, it is largely life-affirming. The makers set out intentionally and in a sensitive manner to engage with the social problems of our time and how they shape the human material. The season, which takes place over 24 hours on July 4th, features an episode in which ICE agents attack and essentially kidnap a nurse from the hospital premises. The impact this has on both hospital workers and patients is shown in its various dimensions, which is its own political statement in the current climate. A plethora of burning social questions emerge in The Pit, and given the time constraints, are covered remarkably well. A nurse is strangled by a patient. A diabetic man abruptly leaves a hospital against medical advice because he lacks health insurance. A prison inmate suffering from scurvy appears in shackles. Deportations tear families apart, and doctors have to battle constantly against medical misinformation that puts patients at risk of injury or death. When writers, directors, and actors choose to draw their narratives deeply from social reality, how much more powerful it is than the empty-headed, self-involved trivia that generally passes for drama, much less the comic book and superhero trash. Art that engages with reality, that depicts the suffering, hopes, and struggles of working people in particular, the people who don't count in official American and global bourgeois life, has the power to move, entertain, and enlighten. The Pit takes place in a big city hospital, and thus, by its very nature, the staff and patients are multinational, multi-ethnic, multiracial. Yet identity politics is absent from the program. The racial and ethnic differences aren't significant issues. The viewer is struck by the high level of solidarity among the physicians, many of them from widely different backgrounds. A broad section of America is here, and yet there's no racial storyline. In a similar vein, when intergenerational conflicts arise, they are not presented as insurmountable. The characters are drawn according to the common problems and challenges they encounter. The difficulties faced by the central character, an attending physician in crisis, also have a more general meaning. Dr. Rabinovich is attempting to fight through the serious, at times intractable problems in the hospital and his life without losing his sanity. Although The Pit has resonated especially strongly with healthcare workers, this is something to which the broader population clearly relates. Workers are the ones who keep society functioning in all its aspects, but they come up against obstacles created by the existing social framework every day. How can we have decent transportation, quality education, safe construction and industrial projects, a functioning electricity grid, a working service sector and so forth, if workers are driven to exhaustion, budgets are slashed, positions are cut, and conditions are generally made impossible? Workers can see and feel the effects of the system on themselves and on others in myriad forms, and they are looking for ways not to succumb to these pressures. The Pit has risen in popularity as the official political institutions and big business sink lower and lower in the public estimate. Of course, this is not simply a matter of one television program. Nurses have been named the most trusted profession in the US for 24 consecutive years as of 2026, according to annual polling from Gallup. Approximately 75% of American adults rate nurses' honesty and ethical standards as high or very high. Medical doctors and pharmacists also receive the approval of the majority, typically being considered trustworthy by between 53 and 62% of those surveyed. On the other hand, capitalists and business executives are generally disliked, if not despised. Recent data shows only about 12 to 15% of the public views such individuals as having high ethical standards. Quote, they are often viewed more negatively than positively, end quote. Members of Congress and other political figures from both major parties are frequently the lowest rated group in such polls. Gallup reports that positive ethical ratings for politicians often fall below 10%, with roughly 62% of the public rating them as low or very low in honesty. In opposition to short staffing, low wages and harsh working conditions, healthcare workers have dug their heels in fierce battles with management in recent times, including in Providence, Rhode Island and Grand Blanc, Michigan. Tens of thousands of nurses were blatantly sold out at Kaiser Permanente and in New York City by their unions. This is a major battlefield in the class struggle. It is not for nothing that the ultra-right City Journal recently and nervously headlined an article, quote, "Why are so many nurses left-wing?" end quote. The Pit has managed to grab hold of a considerable portion of public attention and interest for this combination of reasons: its moving intensity and social realism, its disavowal of racial and gender politics, which has no widespread support, its criticism of ICE and the various anti-democratic, anti-immigrant operations, its portrayal, warts and all, of self-sacrificing human beings dedicated to the public welfare, and its general commitment to human decency in opposition to everything filthy and rotten coming from above. The success of The Pit coincides with the participation of millions upon millions of people in every sizable community in the US on March 28 in the No Kings protests against ICE, war and dictatorship. The population is moving to the left, to an ever more critical view of the status quo, of the gang of criminals and murderers who rule the US, and of capitalism itself. Trump threatens to bomb Iran's power plants and bridges after IRGC closes the Strait of Hormuz. By Andre Damon. US President Donald Trump threatened Sunday to bomb Iran's civilian power grid and bridges after the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, reclosed the Strait of Hormuz. In Truth Social posts Saturday night and Sunday morning, Trump wrote that unless Iran accepts his terms, quote, the United States is going to knock out every single power plant and every single bridge in Iran. He added, quote, no more Mr. Nice Guy, end quote. In a pre-taped phone interview aired Sunday on Fox News Sunday, Trump told Chief Foreign Correspondent Trey Yingst, quote, you're going to see bridges and power plants dropping all over their country, end quote. If no deal is reached, he said, he is, quote, considering blowing everything up and taking over the oil, end quote. On ABC's This Week, he told Jonathan Carl that the Strait of Hormuz could be run as a joint venture between the United States and Iran. Trump also announced on social media that the destroyer USS Spruance had seized the Iranian-flagged cargo ship Tuskar in the Gulf of Oman, firing into its engine room and putting Marines on board. Iran's state news agency, IRNA, then said Tehran would not attend the second round of negotiations supposedly scheduled for Monday in Islamabad. The Pakistani capital was placed under lockdown Sunday night, with 10,000 additional security forces deployed. Trump's threats and the US seizure of the Iranian ship came on day 51 of the US-Israeli war on Iran, on the 12th day of a two-week ceasefire set to expire within 72 hours. On Friday, Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi posted on X that the Strait of Hormuz was open to commercial shipping on a route close to the Iranian coast. 19 ships transited the strait on Friday and Saturday morning, the first meaningful movement of cargo since the February 28 start of the war. The United States did not reciprocate the Iranian reopening, however. Because the US Navy maintained its blockade of Iran's ports, Iran could not export a single barrel of oil. On Saturday evening, the Revolutionary Guard announced over Iranian state media that the strait was being reclosed. Quote, no vessel should move from its anchorage in the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman, the statement warned. Quote, the violating vessel will be targeted, end quote. Within hours, the IRGC gunboats fired on two ships reported by the UK Maritime Trade Operations Organisation. One, a tanker hit by automatic weapons fire, the other a container ship struck by an unknown projectile. Both flew the Indian flag. New Delhi's foreign ministry summoned Iran's ambassador Sunday morning. The French shipping line CMA-CGM turned four of its ships away from the entrance to the strait. Maersk suspended transits entirely. The Brent crude oil price rebounded to $95 a barrel on Saturday. The bombing of civilian power plants, bridges and water systems is a war crime under the Fourth Geneva Convention. On Sunday's political programs, senior administration officials openly defended such criminal actions. US Ambassador to the United Nations, Mike Walls, told CBS's Face the Nation, quote, bridges, power plants that are run by the IRGC are absolute legitimate military targets, not only now, but have been historically. That is a false, fake and ridiculous notion that this is some type of war crime, end quote. On NBC's Meet the Press, Walls cited the Allied bombing of Germany during the Second World War as the precedent for destroying the Iranian civilian grid, on which 90 million people depend for water, electricity and refrigeration. Neither Margaret Brennan at CBS nor Jonathan Carl at ABC pressed Walls on the clear contradiction between Trump's threats and international humanitarian law. On CNN's State of the Union, Jake Tapper asked Representative Elise Stefanik, chair of the House Republican leadership, whether a president should threaten to, quote, wipe out an entire civilization, end quote. She would not answer the question directly, pivoting to defend Trump's language as directed at the Iranian regime rather than at the country as a whole. The ceasefire in Lebanon, brokered at midnight Friday, was broken within 48 hours. On Saturday morning, an Israeli drone killed a motorcyclist in Kunin in the Bint Jabil district. The Israeli military defended the strike under a yellow line doctrine applied to 55 towns in the Lebanese south, modelled on the occupation grid used in Gaza. The same morning, French Staff Sergeant Florian Montario of the 17th Parachute Engineer Regiment, serving with the UN peacekeeping force, was killed and three fellow soldiers wounded near Gandaria. The Lebanese government casualty figures now stand at 2,167 killed, including 172 children, and 7,061 wounded. In Iran, the Al Jazeera casualty tracker records 2,076 dead, including 240 women and 212 children, with 26,500 wounded. The independent monitor, Hirana, puts a total at 3,636. The Pentagon has acknowledged 13 US service members killed in combat. The US average price of gasoline is now $4.09 a gallon. The US average price of gasoline is now $4.09 a gallon. US Energy Secretary Chris Wright said Sunday on CNN that it will not fall below $3 this year. The Democratic Party functions as a critical enabler of Trump's war. In an interview Sunday on Face the Nation, Amos Hochstein, the senior Biden energy adviser who brokered the November 2024 Lebanon ceasefire, said that a Democratic administration would also be bombing Iran. Asked what the previous administration's approach would have been, Hochstein said, quote, "We thought that the spring, summer of 2025 was probably, we may have to be there in the same place. And we did. We did war games. We did some practice runs on what it would look like to look into it, because that may have had to happen under our watch as well," end quote. Hochstein's admission renders absurd all attempts by the Democrats to place the blame for the Iran war on Trump alone or on Netanyahu. The war is a joint bipartisan policy of US imperialism, prepared by both parties and executed by whichever held the White House when the moment came. On Thursday, the House of Representatives held a vote on the War Powers Resolution to end the war. It failed, 213-214. Maine Democrat Jared Golden, a combat veteran of wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, cast the lone Democratic no, arguing that constraining the war would weaken the US position in the Islamabad talks. In the Senate, a parallel resolution failed 47-52, the fourth such defeat in a row. No member of the House Democratic leadership has endorsed Arizona Democratic Representative Yasemin Ansari's impeachment articles against US Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, filed Tuesday and built on the February 28 Tomahawk strike that destroyed a girls' school in Minab, killing more than 160 children. The Sunday television interview programs of April 19, 2026 are a portrait of the ruling class with no significant opposition to mass murder. The sitting president threatens the destruction of the civilian infrastructure on which 90 million people depend. His ambassador to the United Nations defends the threat by citing the firebombing of Dresden in World War II. A former senior Biden official admits on camera that the previous administration had wargamed the same strikes. The war on Iran is a policy of both parties of American capital, backed by their German, British and French partners, against the peoples of Iran, Lebanon and Palestine. The struggle against this war cannot be waged through the existing two-party framework, entirely controlled by corporate America. It requires the independent mobilization of the American and international working class on a program of socialist internationalism led by the International Committee of the Fourth International. HEB grocery warehouse worker dies after workplace accident in San Antonio, by Andy Hartman. Austin Lewis Flores, a worker at a warehouse for the HEB grocery chain in San Antonio, Texas, died after a workplace accident earlier this month. Reports indicated that on April 4 he was working with a floor jack when he was hit by a forklift. Flores was sent to a clinic where an X-ray revealed he had a broken ankle. Several days later, he was found unresponsive at his home. An autopsy revealed that he died of a pulmonary thromboembolism that developed after a blood clot had dislodged and travelled to his lungs. Austin's mother, Brenda Flores, cared for him for 4 days after the accident. She said that he had a hematoma, a localized collection of clotted blood outside blood vessels, often caused by trauma, about the size of a watermelon on the right side of his body. He could not lie down straight and could not sit down for too long because of the pain. In less than 24 hours, nearly 1,000 comments were left on a Facebook page where Flores' death was reported. Some of the commenters spoke of similar incidents that they, friends and family members, had experienced. This follows the death of another HEB warehouse worker at the same location last October. Teresa Dominguez, 27, was found unconscious in a freezer. The Bexar County Medical Examiner's Office later determined that she had died of blunt trauma. Witnesses said that she had exhibited signs of distress while driving a forklift. After being discovered, EMS was called and transported her to a local hospital, where she later died. Quote, 6 months and nothing has changed. No major safety improvement, nothing was fixed, Brenda Flores said. Quote, my son should have been transported to an ER immediately from hitting that floor at HEB. No excuses, no exceptions. And now my son is gone too, end quote. Workplace injuries and deaths are not uncommon in warehouses. Grocery stores are also hazardous workplaces. Some of the most common causes of injuries include forklift and other vehicle accidents, falling objects, slips on wet or clotted floors, extreme temperatures in freezers, and overexertion and repetitive stress. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, grocery workers experience nearly twice the average rate of non-fatal workplace injuries compared to other private sector workers. In 2024, the approximately 2.6 out of 100 workers suffered some type of workplace injury, while for grocery workers they suffered at a rate of around 4 per 100. There have been multiple cases of workers dying after being locked in freezers. In one case, in February 2024, Nuiet Lee, an employee at Arby's restaurant in New Iberia, Louisiana, died when a latch on a walk-in freezer broke. An autopsy revealed that Lee died of hypothermia. The freezer was typically kept at temperatures of minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 23 degrees Celsius or colder. A former employee reported that workers would use a screwdriver to open and close the freezer door and would prop it open with a box of oil. Court documents for a lawsuit filed by Lee's family said that, quote, the investigating officer relayed that inside of the door of the freezer had been bloodied, leading him to conclude Ms. Lee panicked once locked inside and beat her hands bloody, trying to escape or get someone's attention, end quote. In 2023, the World Socialist website reported on the death of a worker at a Kroger grocery warehouse in Memphis, Tennessee. In that incident, the worker was found unresponsive while working in an environment without air conditioning during a heat wave. The COVID-19 pandemic proved to be especially dangerous for grocery workers. Under conditions where these workers were considered essential, at least 158 workers are known to have died, with many more infected or exposed. HEB workers are not covered by a union, but in unionised workplaces, officials work as little more than agents of management. The United Food and Commercial Workers, UFCW, has rammed through pro-company contracts across the country in the face of worker opposition. In spite of a history of workplace accidents in the grocery industry, unions have done nothing to improve worker safety in these environments. Government workplace safety regulations are weak due to limited enforcement mechanisms and low penalties for violations. Occupational Health and Safety Administration, OSHA, has limited authority and resources. Many employers consider the low fines as a cost of doing business rather than a serious consequence that will cause them to change their practices. Based in San Antonio, HEB is a major grocery chain operating over 400 grocery stores in Texas and Mexico. The company employs about 175,000 workers and is one of the largest private employers in Texas. In 2025, it had total revenues of $50 billion, making it the 19th largest retailer in the United States. HEB chairman Charles Butt was listed 230th on the Forbes list of billionaires in 2025, with a net worth of over $10 billion. For these articles and more, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Jenny Campbell.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.